Hello, hello. What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I'm a managing editor over at movies.com. Joining me every week, he is the man, he's the myth, he's the legend. He lives in North Carolina. There's a shout out to his home state. His name is Sean O'Connell. He is the movies content director over at cinemablend.com. Sean, what's up?
You're giving me the hives because you started talking to me about Comic-Con before all this, and I see, you know, stories today about Batman, Superman may screen there and or have some footage at least, and they're talking about Hall H lines, and this is going to be our focus for the next few weeks. So Comic-Con, tent poles, superhero movies, and I think that's going to help us transition into today's discussion a little bit.
Yeah, we're all going to talk about some older movies, especially one that today is celebrating its 25th anniversary. This is a superhero movie that I think shaped a lot of superhero movies to come after that and shaped a lot of the landscape that we're sort of living in today. But before we get to that, let's touch on Comic-Con fast because some of the movies that are rumored to be screening footage there are summer movies. What we're hearing, and tell me what you're seeing, because I've also seen the same stuff, but what I'm seeing is that potentially, and I love how we use the word potentially because we know it's going to happen, but potentially the first footage from both The Avengers Age of Ultron and Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice are going to screen inside Hall H at San Diego Comic-Con in just a few weeks from now. I think July
23rd to the 27th, I think. July
23rd to the 27th. Really, it's that Saturday, though. Really, if you want to cancel your plans for one of the days at Comic-Con and be like, all right, I'm canceling plans for the day because this is the day where it's all going down. Right. Usually it's that Saturday. So you're looking at Saturday, July 26th, cancel your plans now. But is that what you're hearing? Are those the movies that you think we're going to see footage from?
Those are the two that I've heard recently. I also wouldn't be surprised if Universal – So Disney and Marvel – well, Marvel's going to have their panel. And you got to assume that they're going to have – a lot of Phase 3 information, which could be your Doctor Strange, probably not your Ant-Man anymore. I think we kind of know what we know about that. Unless it might be one of those things where, like, they bring out the cast so people can see the cast the way they did with Guardians. Like, we knew who was in Guardians, but they just sort of rolled them out. And then they surprise you with footage. Now, maybe they bring an Ant-Man cast out and surprise you with a mock teaser because the Guardians one went over so well. But then I think they're going to end with Avengers footage. I think Universal has some big titles that they could talk about. They could bring Fast 7 footage. They could bring Jurassic World footage. Because these are films that have, you know, Fast 7's almost done shooting, and Jurassic World's been shooting for a little while. So
when is Universal's panel? Do we have a schedule yet?
Nothing. I haven't seen anything yet.
Well, you know Marvel's going to end the day on Saturday, and from what I'm hearing, Warner Brothers may be right before them.
Okay, because Warner Brothers was the first one out the gate last Saturday, and it was a good last summer on the Saturday day, and it was a great slot for them. And then there was a weird sort of like Summit and Lionsgate went during the day, and it's just you were waiting for Marvel to come. But it was when Zack Snyder came out and introduced the concept of Batman Superman. And, dude, if they come out and have footage, that's going to be the gauntlet throw. I think even if Marvel has Avengers footage, seeing Batman Superman on screen is going to be massive. Massive.
Yeah, I think we're going to see definitely reveals of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Okay. I could definitely see that. And I could see Zack Snyder up there while they have concept art behind him on the screen. Right. And then I could see him saying, okay, you know, they'll probably bring out some of the cast, Affleck, Gal Gadot. I could see them coming out. And they'll probably do a little Q&A. And then right at the end, I could see him saying, oh, you guys want to watch a little of the movie?
Yeah.
that's usually how they do it.
And maybe in those reveals, like other characters, other Justice League characters, possibly.
Maybe. Maybe. It's interesting because Marvel didn't do a lot of announcing last year. I think because they weren't ready to announce their Phase 3 and they already knew what Phase 2 was. So it was more about Thor footage, Cap footage, right, and then the announcement of Age of Ultron as a title. So this year, I mean, Ant-Man doesn't start shooting until August. They're not going to replay Edgar Wright's old Ant-Man reel.
Oh, what a slap in the face that would be.
Yeah, so I can't see them really having anything to show from Ant-Man except for concept art. So maybe we'll see some concept art for Ant-Man.
Doctor Strange casting, I guarantee.
Doctor Strange casting, maybe.
Yeah, I could see them bringing out whoever they have planned. Feige said you're going to hear in the next few weeks. Someone speculated August, but I wouldn't be surprised if they just revealed it at Comic-Con. You know, one title that I think is going to be there, too, is Terminator Genesis. Schwarzenegger has been showing up lately. They brought Escape Plan there. He and Stallone brought it there last year. Comic-Con's become the place where guys like Harrison Ford and Stallone, they come and they sort of stroke their ego and retouch their fan base. I can totally see Schwarzenegger holding... Oh, they've done Expendables panels there too, right?
Yeah.
So they can hold the Terminator Genesis panel and get people amped up. They've been filming that for a while now too. They could easily bring some footage for that.
Yeah, so I mean, some big movies we could see some footage for. At Comic-Con this year. And so now it's just about getting into Hall H.
Oh, God. That's what's making me...
That's the stressed out part. Because these panels are really fun. It's like, you know, if you've never been to Comic-Con, you know, and people kind of roll their eyes. Oh, so you saw 30 seconds of Avengers Age of Ultron. Sometimes that footage is online and people are like, oh, you know, I didn't even have to go to Comic-Con. But there's a difference between watching it online for the first time and watching it for the first time in a room full of 6,000 screaming fans. It's almost like you're at a crazy sporting event.
There was no real there's nothing I can point at to say that it matched the intensity of just the reveal of the title card, Age of Ultron. I literally felt like the walls of Hall H were going to come crashing down on top of people.
I think the girl behind me kicked me. Somebody kicked me really hard when that title was announced.
And it showed nothing. It was just a title. And people were losing their minds.
Yeah, and everybody's in costumes. It's just a surreal experience. It's an interesting environment to be in. You know, Comic-Con gets a lot of flack as this big marketing extravaganza. But as a fan... It's a fun experience. It's an interesting environment to sort of see this footage for the first time because it's really the only time you get to do that all year. Other than that, you're watching movie trailers at home. You're watching them on online on YouTube. Sometimes you see them in a theater with other fans, but there's nothing like seeing it with 6,000 people. And
I think we've talked about this before, maybe even on this podcast. Like, Comic-Con reminds me of how important this stuff is to people who are out there tracking these projects. Like, we track them on a day-to-day basis, and sometimes it can feel like a grind because you have to know every little minute detail, and sometimes it takes the fun out of just sitting back and watching these films. And when fans who wait in line to get into Hall H forever, you know, are treated to this footage and the opportunity to maybe get up and ask a question of an actor or a director or someone who they really admire and the work that they appreciate, dude, that's so invigorating to me. Like, I love seeing that, and I love being reminded of how important there are people who are like, oh, I'm exhausted with superhero movies. Dude, just shut up, because there's a huge fan base out there who wants more and more and more. And if you told them, you know, there's going to be 24 over the next 4 years, they think that's a great thing. And they're willing to give up their time and their energy and their money and all of this stuff just to be part of it for a day. And we're lucky enough, dude, we're lucky enough to be on the front line. And the Comic-Con reminds me of that.
I agree. Comic-Con is an exhausting event for guys like Sean and I who actually have to cover it. But it is an event that is always full of surprises and lots of fun stuff and lots of crazy costumes. So I look forward to being there this year. Sean will be there this year. And hopefully we'll meet up and we'll podcast a little bit and tell you what's happening and what we're seeing. And
I think last year we podcasted from right outside the convention center.
I think we did.
So we'll do that again.
I think we did. I actually podcasted from within the convention center between panels. I think I did that last year, too.
That's awesome.
That Saturday. I remember I was in there, you know, because Saturday is usually the big day there. And I remember I was in there from like 9 a.m. till 8 p.m. It was just like this marathon of 10 hours inside Hall H. And you just feel like you're just completely defeated at the end. But you know what? It's those panels. It's those big panels that keep you going and keep you fired up. So, again, I look forward to it. But moving on to movies that have huge influence and superhero movies, today is the 25th anniversary of Tim Burton's Batman opening in theaters, June 23rd, 1989. And this is a big movie from my childhood. Sean, we're around the same age, so we were kids when this film hit. And from what I remember about Batman, like, my first memory is coming up an escalator in my mall to this giant tower of Batman merchandise. I had never really seen a film sort of marketed that way before. And I think when people think about Tim Burton's Batman, that's one of the first thoughts that come to their minds, is just how it changed the landscape of marketing these sorts of movies to the public, these sorts of superhero movies. But also, you know, Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson. I think Jack Nicholson's casting as Joker in that film sort of legitimized villain casting in superhero movies, and sure. I think we've sort of seen that. We still see interesting actors, very well known. I mean, you look, you know, Marvel sort of continuing that. Michael Douglas, Robert Redford, guys that you wouldn't expect to see in these kinds of movies. I feel like Jack Nicholson's casting as Joker really kicked that whole thing off.
Hold on, I'll argue. You got Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor. That's pretty big.
Yeah, but it's a different time. I think, you know, and Gene Hackman was sort of looked like Gene Hackman. Okay, well, he was bald a little bit, you know, but I feel like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Playing the Joker in makeup, dancing around to Prince.
Yeah.
In a purple suit is a little bit more extreme than Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor.
Batman is very of the moment in that instance, in the fact that the way that the superhero movies now don't try to connect themselves to the era that they're in. You know, when Batman came out, I think movies were still very much trying to get a hit song by a popular artist that you could have a tie-in with, you know. And there are all these things that were important to blockbusters at that time. You needed to have, like, a bat dance sequence so that you could have a Prince single to sell, you know, concurrently, and that's not important anymore. So those little decisions I find really interesting with something like Batman, if you go back to sort of revisit it now at this time. And you're right. I would love to know, like, what – I probably should have researched this – like, why Nicholson agreed to do it. Like, was it the ability to work with Tim Burton? Because Burton was still pretty young at this point. He was coming off of Beetlejuice. He did Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but he wasn't really Tim Burton yet, you know? And so I don't know if the draw of working with him – or working alongside Michael Keaton, who was a known comic, you know, actor at the time. So I would love to know what lured Nicholson over to doing Batman at that moment, because you're right, it did completely change how people viewed superhero movies and summer blockbusters, summer tent poles. It all of a sudden became an acceptable genre.
And what's interesting about that is Nicholson, you know, there's one fun fact about Tim Burton's Batman that I really like, and it's the fact that in Jack Nicholson's The Shining sort of is what inspired the concept of a darker Batman, of Jack Nicholson playing the Joker. There was an image, and there's a story about this guy, Michael Uslan, who bought the rights to Batman and wanted to make a film and is pitching it around. And in 1980, there's an ad for The Shining. And it's a picture of Jack Nicholson, the Here's Johnny moment, you know, with the axe where he's all, like, smiling and he's a maniac.
Right.
And he sketched over that picture white paint as, like, the Joker. Like, this is how maniacal. I want to take this face and put the Joker over this. And that is part of what he used to pitch this Batman. And it's just – I just think it's interesting that – it was The Shining, really, that sort of, I think, sold people on Nicholson, the fact that Nicholson could play that kind of wild, crazy role.
Sure, definitely. No, I agree. What do you think is the biggest change that Burton's Batman implemented that we're still seeing to this day? Is there one you can point at and say, all of these movies sort of owe this to Burton's Batman?
You know, I want to say sort of guys like Jack Nicholson as playing villains, you know,
right.
Because he's, like I said, I mean, he was at that time, Jack Nicholson was Jack Nicholson, you know, and it's just like you would never think that he would play someone like that. So I think that sort of unexpected casting and of really high caliber actors in superhero movies we're definitely still seeing that today. You know, in terms of, I mean, Tim Burton has his own kind of aesthetic that nobody can really touch.
Right.
So I don't think, I mean, maybe the darker, grittier sort of superhero movie that it came along with that movie with Batman. You know, I mean, prior to Tim Burton's Batman, all we really knew were the Adam West versions, which were campy and funny and silly. So Tim Burton's Batman kind of helped usher in a little bit of a darker superhero movie.
Well, that's what I would. Yeah, that's what I would go with, is the fact that with Burton's Batman, and here's something too. Like, my kids have never seen it. Like, they've seen some of Batman Returns, because that's a little bit more accessible. But it's the first superhero movie that, like, I don't think it paid attention to kids. And prior to that, you know, kids were supposed to be the driving force behind movies based on comic books. Even though, you know, so many adults collect comic books and read comic books, I think prior to that, almost every film that was going to be adapted from a superhero property, not that there were a ton of them prior to that, were going to go after kids, were aimed at kids. I mean, the Batman TV series was so campy and family-friendly, and Burton was like, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm going to make something that grown-ups can get into, that's way more accessible to them. My kids are 10 and 6, and I still don't think they're ready for Burton's Batman.
Which was probably part of the reason why it was marketed so over the top.
Right.
Was because they had a film that it's not really a Batman movie for kids. It's not campy. It's completely unlike any other Batman movie you've ever seen, anything Batman that you've seen in a live-action capacity.
Right.
And so we have to create everything. We have to market this thing like it is just the last movie you will ever see.
And then when Schumacher went younger, the franchise got panned, you know?
Well, when Schumacher came on, and he still, to this day, admits that he was making movies for toys.
Yeah.
He was making movies for kids and movies for toys. And that's the only thing that was on his agenda. I like the Jim Carrey, Tommy Lee Jones one.
Yeah.
I still have a little bit of a place in my heart. Just because at that time when I was a kid, you know, Jim Carrey being cast as the Riddler, this was when Jim Carrey was you know, huge. Like, that was really cool casting to me.
Here's something that I'm going to admit on tape or whatever we're doing this on. I'm not a huge fan of any of these Batman movies. I think they're all kind of flawed. Like, I didn't really dig Batman movies until the Nolan ones.
Really? Because I was going to ask you if you had to put Tim Burton's Batman alongside all of these Batman movies, would it be near the top? Would it be one of the best Batman, since it was the first one to really sort of dig into the darker side of Batman?
Yeah, no, see, I never really, when, as a kid growing up, like, everyone's got their think pieces going today about, you know, 25 years ago I stood in line for this and that. And I was a Marvel kid, and I barely ever read DC. And so I saw Superman movies when they came out, and I saw the Batman movie when it came out, but I didn't – these weren't my heroes. I didn't like – not that I didn't like them, but I just wasn't as vested in them. So, you know, and I didn't know 25 years ago who Tim Burton was. So I didn't really care, you know, that it was a Tim Burton movie or that he was attempting a superhero movie. I just went to watch it because it was a Batman movie, and I saw it once and I was probably like, yeah, all right, that's fine. But I thought Nicholson was too campy. You know, the Prince edition was cheesy. You know what bothered me most about these movies is I don't think you get a lot of Batman. Like, there's not a lot of Batman movies or Batman sequences in them where there's good fight sequences. Like, now superhero movies have to have big tentpole, eye-popping fight sequences, and these movies didn't have them. I thought Michael Keaton was always, like, the third or fourth most interesting thing in these films by design. You know, it was always like, who are we casting for the villain, and how big and broad can the villain be? And the Batman movies were, like, I think Vicki Vale gets more attention in Burton's Batman than Batman does.
Yeah, no, it's hard to disagree with you, you know, especially now that we look back after Christopher Nolan's trilogy.
Which,
and to see what you could really do with Batman, you know, he raised the bar significantly. And I'm curious to see where Zack Snyder lands with Batman after Christopher Nolan. I do not envy that man for what he has to do now.
Can you point at a Batman sequence in any of those films? Either of the two Burtons? Like, is there a Batman scene you can point to where you're like, that's a badass Batman scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Special effects were not what they are today in 1989.
Sure. Right. His costume wasn't, you know, easy to move around in, and all of that's changed. I get that.
Yeah, you know, so you don't have these sort of one-on-one giant fights that you can do today. I mean, you have the scene towards the end when he's flying in the copter. But, you know, Tim Burton's Batman, a lot of my favorite scenes are Nicholson's.
Yeah.
You know, because when you have Nicholson playing the Joker, you have to give Nicholson his big scenes. And, you know, I mean, the museum scene, Dance to Prince, is probably one of my favorite scenes from the movie.
But I didn't want a Joker movie.
No, you know? I know.
So that's always been one of the things that's kept me from fully embracing these as saying, like, they're on a pedestal with me. Like, I would never put any of them above even... Well, I don't know about Dark Knight Rises. Like, that's a good question. I think Dark Knight Rises is deeply flawed.
You know what's interesting, though, about Dark Knight Rises is that in terms of rewatchability,
yeah.
I would watch Dark Knight Rises more than I would Tim Burton's Batman. I always find myself, every time that movie's on, and I see other people say that, too, every time the Dark Knight Rises is on cable, I don't know, I just find my way to it. And when I put it on, I just can't stop watching it. It's the weirdest thing.
I'm not going to argue with you about that for sure. If any of the ones have rewatchability, to me, it's Batman Returns.
Really? I did not like Batman Returns.
Oh, well, I just think that they found a little bit more for Keaton to do. And I thought Penguin and Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman were just more interesting villains.
Yeah, well, I like how Burton is in Gotham a little bit more. Because one thing that I love about Tim Burton is I just wanted to live in his Gotham.
Yes.
Because it was so Tim Burton-y. And so we did get to see more Gotham in Batman Returns, so I'll give you that.
But by the time you got to the two Schumacher ones, they felt just like, you know, when you were watching like an 80s sitcom and someone would come in and they'd be introduced and they would get like the clap from the audience because the person was there. Like, all of those films seem like set up for the moment when someone gets introduced. Like, everybody's so hammy and here's my moment to shine. And they don't work as movies. They don't work as like stories that you're invested in. I can't tell you the plot of any of the Batman movies prior to, but you know, whereas we all have the Nolan ones committed to memory, it's not just because we've seen them fresh, it's because he put more of an attention to a script, and it wasn't just, hey, here's Batman in a suit and it's a ton of color and go, you know.
Where do you think Ben Affleck's Batman lands after Nolan's, after Burton's, after Schumacher's? Where does this Batman land? I mean, what can you do now? Does he take the criticisms of Christopher Nolan's Batman, the growl, you know, what does he do? What does he have to do in order to separate this Batman from all the others?
You're exactly right. It's a tough order. They're huge shoes to fill, and not just because of Nolan's, but because of everybody's perception of Batman is, it's evolved completely over the years. And we've had so many different versions to compare it to. I think that he has to be the counter completely to what Henry Cavill's Superman is. And if Henry Cavill's Superman at the end of Man of Steel was this, he had a do-gooder sort of sense to him of, even when he was throwing the satellite back down at the feet of the military guys, and he's like, look, you know, you just have to trust me that I'm not here to hurt you guys. I'm kind of here to protect you. Ben Affleck has to counter that with an attitude that says, like, I'm the bad motherfucker in here, and try and sell the contradiction of what Cavill's Superman is. Because I think you're calling it Batman v Superman. They have to be clashing personalities. This has to be a war of strong-willed people. And I think that Affleck can play that. Because you've said before, like, you love when Affleck is playing the biggest jerk in the room. And I think his Batman needs to be an arrogant jerk.
I hope he is. I think I'll be honest with you right now. With that, sight unseen, Affleck's Bruce Wayne is going to be so much better than Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne.
Yes, it will be.
Bruce Wayne is the role of a lifetime for Ben Affleck, because he can, when he wants to pour on the charisma, he can pour on the charisma. And I can see him having a lot of fun with Bruce Wayne. So I hope They do not make him some, like, mopey Bruce Wayne who's just, like, hiding in a, well, you know. I hope he gets to be the quote-unquote Bruce Wayne because it'd be fun.
Affleck always comes off as this guy who, although he doesn't, you know, he comes from Boston blue collar. He comes across as a guy who, like, came from money, has an arrogance to him, you know, and thinks he's better than you are. And Bruce Wayne is sort of that guy. Like, he's supposed to be, you know, bred from wealth and better than you guys are. And so when you cast Affleck as Matt Murdock, that was the wrong choice for Daredevil, because Matt Murdock's like a public defender, you know, working for the poor and then fighting even harder for them in a costume. And it just didn't – that wasn't right. You're exactly right. He's perfect for Bruce Wayne.
Do you think he'll say, I popped my Batmobile at Gotham Yard?
No, I was watching the clip of how they announced
it. Popped it over in Southie. Does Gotham have a Southie?
Yes, I'm sure it does. It has a Narrows, which we saw in Batman Begins and then never saw again. That was
disappointing. It does. It just has one seedy neighborhood after the next.
It's just
poor Gotham. I was like, where's like the good neighborhood? Like, where do you want to like actually raise your, like, if you're living in Gotham and you're like, this is actually a great neighborhood. The school districts are all rated really high.
Right.
I've never seen that neighborhood in Gotham.
Are we even going to see Gotham in this? I assume we will. God, this movie has to cover so much ground.
Yeah, this movie's got to do so much. God bless it.
Yeah, it has to be 4 hours long.
I hope it is. But I hope we see that first footage at Comic-Con. And it is nice to look back at Tim Burton's Batman and all that it gave us and more that over the years. So
I think it taught the industry a lot. I think it taught the industry that this niche is very strong, and obviously they've been exploring it and exploiting it ever since.
Yes, yes. But yes, so happy 25th anniversary to Tim Burton's Batman.
Yes.
And you know, we were going to touch on another movie that also came out. It came out actually yesterday. In 1984, The Karate Kid. But you know what? We don't have a lot of time yet, Sean, and I feel like we need to dedicate an entire podcast to the summer of 1984.
You need time to talk Karate Kid. I know you can't just cram it in.
I can't just cram it in. There's no way. I want to do an entire... We're going to do an entire episode where we talk about the summer of 1984 because it is 30 years since that summer, and that summer gave us so many movies. The Karate Kid, among them, Ghostbusters and Gremlins on the same freaking day.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I wish I would have had the know it. I was too young then. I was what, 7 years old. I would have loved to have been able to say that I did a double feature of Gremlins and Ghostbusters, maybe paid to see one and snuck into the other one on that day. But there are people who did that, I'm sure.
What are going to be those movies now, though? Like, what 30 years from now, what are kids going to be talking about? Is it Earth to Echo?
I mean, the kids aren't going to be talking to each other 30 years from now. Nobody's going to be talking to each other. Like, in a physical sense, no. Like, nobody's doing, like, where you could go outside and, like, actually talk to your friends. No, that's not going to happen.
That's hysterical. That's true. It's sad, but true.
I don't even know. I don't even know what's going to be. But, I guess the Avengers.
No, see, it's got to be these one-offs. It's got to be, like, an Earth to Echo. It's got to be something different where people took chances and didn't just latch itself onto a franchise.
If that's what people care about 30 years from now. You know, I mean, if you're a generation that grows up with franchises, and right, that's your norm, and that's what you're nostalgic for, then why would they be nostalgic for the riskier projects? I mean, you know, you talk like guys like us. Guys like us grew up in the 80s, where just they didn't give a crap what they were putting out. Everything was a risk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, you know, you don't get films like that today, you know. So how can you be nostalgic for something that you never grew up with?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, we had movie stars that we followed to different projects back in the day. Like, you'd go see whatever Kurt Russell was doing or Sylvester Stallone was doing or a director that you appreciated or something like that. Now it's all about the brand. It's all about what's Marvel doing, what's Star Wars doing. You know, it's different times.
Different times. Different times. Sean O'Connell, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course.
Happy birthday to Tim Burton's Batman, a movie that will forever live near and dear to our hearts, but not maybe Sean because he doesn't like it.
Are we going to talk Michael Bay next week? Should we both commit to seeing Transformers?
Yeah, we're going to see Transformers. I'm going to try to see. I don't think I'm going to see the screening, but I'm going to try to see it this weekend. So we'll talk about Transformers: Age of Extinction next week. So stay tuned.
Fair enough. I'm in. Count me in.
Have a good weekend at the movies, everybody. And, yeah, enjoy your week. Bye.